Good morning, church family. It's good to be here with you today. If you are a guest, we just want to extend a special welcome to you today. We're thankful that you've chosen to be with us. And I would love to meet you today as our guest. If I haven't met you yet, I'll be out at our guest services area in the main lobby area where you came in this morning. I'd love to meet you. Danny mentioned the cards in front of you there in the pew. If you'll fill one of those out, if you have not yet, and just bring it to me out in the guest services area, I can take that from you and answer any questions that you might have about Alta Mesa. We would love for you to continue to come and be a part of our church family. We live in an ever-increasing digital world. Have you noticed that? Maybe you've noticed that. And there are some fairly obvious positive and negative consequences due to this ever-increasing digital world. For me, one of the huge positives is what we call, I guess what Apple calls, FaceTime on our devices. From Monrovia, Liberia, West Africa this past May, I was able to not only talk to my family, but see them live. And I just can't get over how amazing that is. It just blows my finite mind. I don't know even how that works. But I'm just amazed at how well it works, that I feel like I'm in the living room talking to my family, though I'm thousands upon thousands of miles away from them, overseas, on another continent, in another country. I'm able to see them and talk to them. And I would venture to guess that you would rate personal connection as one of the positives of the technology world of our digital age. However, we could list some negatives too, right? There's some unnerving negatives to this technology that go along with it. On the top of my list is how we treat others and at times how we treat ourselves in this digital world. Oftentimes we use email and texting and Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and Snapchat, just to name a few. Some of you don't even know what some of those things are. Frankly, I don't either. I don't use them. But there's more and more of these ways, these avenues that we can communicate with each other on social media, and we express how we feel about someone or something they did, and instead of treating others the way that we want to be treated. Does that sound familiar? The golden rule of Jesus. I teach it to my kids every day, repeatedly. Treat others the way you want to be treated. Instead of doing that, we treat others however we want in this digital world. Instead of picking up the phone or setting up a face-to-face conversation with someone, we use the social media platforms to humiliate people. And I think maybe we get intoxicated with the feeling of power that this somehow brings to us. We feel empowered by being able to type out whatever we want. Maybe we feel validated in that by updating our status with poisonous words of slander or sharp words of correction or a polarizing political position. We somehow feel empowered by this. And so we mistreat people. We treat them however we want. But from another angle, we torture ourselves sometimes. We do this by seeking approval through digital community, which those two words together seem paradoxical to me, because how can we have community if there's no real social interaction, right? So think about that. But we post a picture or we post a comment on Facebook or Twitter or both, and then we are infatuated with this idea of going back. We waste time by going back and seeing who liked it and who commented on it and who shared it. And we're looking for significance in that. But in contrast, we feel ignored or invaluable if people aren't responding to what we've posted. The bottom line is this. I believe at times we are enamored with status. We're enamored with power. We're enamored with appearance, how people see us. And unfortunately, we oftentimes treat people with indifference or even hate to obtain them. So with that backdrop in mind, Jesus not only takes our inappropriate and flippant treatment of others, and he gently whispers to us, "How would it make you feel if someone treated you that way?" You see, that's what the golden rule is about, getting us to see it from the other person's perspective. Jesus not only does that, but then he stretches us and he commands us to follow him into the kingdom world of unorthodox treatment of others. And so I want us to begin with this. Jesus contrasts the way that society would typically interact with people, and he commands his disciples to be completely different from culture, to be distinctive, to stand out, to not only be kind, but to be distinctive, to not follow the crowd of culture. So first, and maybe the hardest one, is this. Love those who disagree with you. Jesus did. He loved people who didn't agree with him. And he taught us to do the same. You might remember the words, or maybe you've never heard them before. So listen closely to Matthew chapter 5, starting in verse 43. Jesus taught these words. "You have heard that it was said, 'Love your neighbor and hate your enemy.' But I tell you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you, that you may be children of your Father in heaven. He causes his sun to rise on the evil and the good, and he sends rain on the righteous and the unrighteous. If you love those who love you, what reward will you get? Are not even the tax collectors doing that? And if you greet only your own people, what are you doing more than others? Do not even pagans do that? So be perfect, therefore, as your heavenly Father is perfect." So Jesus points out here that even unbelievers, people who have no desire or commitment to follow Jesus, even unbelievers love and treat their people well. They're doing their very best to treat them with kindness and love and respect. It's pretty basic, right? But what I want us to hear and what I want us to see this morning is that being a disciple of Jesus is anything but basic, and it's anything but comfortable. It's about self-sacrifice. It's about agape, unconditional love. And God's love expresses itself in word and deed, that every person is created in the image of God, that every person has value, and that every person can be used by him. Even those that disagree with you. Even those that are your irritants. I've said before, and Randy Harris says in his book about the Sermon on the Mount, I don't have a lot of enemies. I've got some irritants. I'm sure I'm somebody's irritant. But maybe you do have an enemy, for real. You feel attacked. Jesus calls us to love them. And again, in a world where it's easy to express an opinion and then be attacked for it, it's very easy. But on the flip side of that, oftentimes we're the attackers with our words. At times we can be guilty of polarizing ourselves in a political argument online or a personal preference, and we completely, in those moments where we just go off the deep end in these things, we lose sight of Jesus's kingdom values for our life. And I've heard people say, and I've seen people write, that somehow, somewhere along the way, we've lost the ability to just be in conversation with people in a decent and honoring way. I don't know what happened to that, but we've lost it. And as Christians, we need to be the ones modeling that. The starting place is love, right? Not love the way the world defines it, but a gospel-centric, agape kind of love. As disciples, we talk about love your neighbor, but oftentimes what I think our interpretation of that means for us is that I'll love those who believe the way that I do. Or I'll love my friends, or I'll love those who are kind to me first, or I'll love those who love me first. And so my hunch is when we get in a sharp disagreement with someone, or when we're faced with being in close proximity with someone who's different from us, different could mean a lot of different things. It could mean different in faith background, or political affiliation, or sexual orientation, or et cetera, different from us. My hunch is when we are in those situations that we have a great difficulty. We have this tension inside of us that gets in the way of loving them the way that Jesus has called us to love them. And yet that's exactly the unorthodox kingdom way that Jesus commands us to live. So here's the second way that I believe Jesus treated people and he calls us to follow him is love those who are disadvantaged. As we read through Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, the first four books of the New Testament, we call them Gospels. As we look through those books, we see Jesus healing and caring for and eating with people that were considered by society as outcasts, those who are the unmentionables, the untouchables, the unclean. People would label them and stay away from them. But Jesus not only hung out with these people, but he also had compassion on them. He loved them, and he often made the marginalized the heroes of his stories. Go back and read the parables with that angle in mind. How many times does he make the disadvantaged, the marginalized, the outcast, the unclean? How often does he make them the heroes of his parables? And I think he did that to help us, to help his people then and his people now to think differently about how we treat people. Because in the kingdom of God, we treat people with honor and respect and mercy and love. What we all need to recognize today, I believe, I think the biggest hurdle in this, in treating others the way that we want to be treated, I think the biggest hurdle is recognizing something. Oftentimes we look at people and we can see their physical ailments. They are disadvantaged because of their handicap physically or maybe mentally. And we fail to recognize that we are all disadvantaged. Whether it's physically, emotionally, or spiritually, listen, we have all sinned and fallen short of the glory of God, and so therefore we are all in need of his mercy and grace. We're all disadvantaged in some way, shape, or form. We all are in need of his endless mercy and unfailing love. So here's one of my favorite stories that Jesus told with the disadvantaged being the heroes. From Luke 14. Then Jesus said to his host, "Listen, when you give a luncheon or a dinner, do not invite your friends, your brothers or sisters, your relatives or your rich neighbors. If you do, they may invite you back, and so you will be repaid." Sound familiar from Matthew chapter 5? "But when you give a banquet, invite the poor, invite the crippled, the lame, the blind, and you will be blessed. Although they cannot repay you, you will be repaid at the resurrection of the righteous." I want to tell you a story that's near and dear to my heart, and I hope it illustrates well what we need to be doing here. One of my spiritual heroes is Tara's grandfather. His name's Hugh Tubbs. We affectionately call him Paul. So for the rest of the story, that's what I'll call him. From the first day I met Paul, I knew that he loved Jesus. It was written all over his face. He treated me with grace and kindness. He was a hospitable host. And the love of Christ just oozes out of him in the way that he treats other people. But what I want you to know is that that's especially true to those who are disadvantaged. He's encouraging, he's compassionate, he's patient, and he's kind. One of my favorite examples from his life is just this past year, I was able to witness this myself. Every year for many, many years now, Paul has he's been a participant in a fishing tournament that raises money for children who have cancer in their families. And what this fishing tournament does is it not only raises money, but it gives these families something to look forward to, something fun and memorable for them to do together. And I was able to see this past year myself. And so in order to participate, you have to pay your tournament fee in order to fish. But the other thing is that you have to have one or two kids on your boat. Typically, they're elementary-aged kids. And if you've ever been fishing with an elementary-aged kid who especially has no fishing experience at all, you know you have to be patient. And Paul is a pro with this. He's so patient. He's so encouraging. He's so kind. And he told me, he said, every year my kids catch at least one fish, even if it was mine. And so he just looks forward to this because he's so loving, he's so patient, and he wants to give these kids and their families something that they can remember, something that they can celebrate together. But above all, he's one of my spiritual heroes because he's the closest thing to agape love that I've ever personally witnessed. Many years ago, he and his wife agreed to adopt their youngest son. And for 30 plus years now, their son has been in and out of drug treatment centers, in and out of prison, in and out of jobs, in and out of one dysfunctional relationship that includes two precious boys. And through all of this, they questioned between themselves, what did we do wrong? And with that questioning comes, if you've had a wayward child or if you have one now, you know with that comes some guilt and some shame, like we made mistakes. Maybe we're the mistake. And you're hard on yourself. And Ma and Paul did that quite a bit. They struggled with when to help and when to disengage because the last thing they wanted to do was be enablers, right? They didn't want to enable their son's behaviors, and yet they didn't want to give up on him either. Because when their friends and when their church family and when their little town was saying, just give up. You've done enough already. Paul would say, no, God's not done with him yet. And so I can't be done either. Sometimes that meant tough love. Sometimes that meant engaging. But he never has given up on his son. And many of you know Tara's grandmother recently passed away. And so her Paul's trying to figure out how to do this new normal. And as a part of that transition, it seems that he has found this renewed strength to invest again in their wayward son. And so they go fishing together. They're doing house maintenance projects together. Paul's encouraging him to be a good father. And he's emphasizing the importance of a church community to John. But what you need to know is that for decades now, Paul and Maul have emphasized the Lord in a church community to John. And he's never taken an interest in it. Never. And two Sundays ago, Tara was in Houston and decided to surprise her Paul for church, to go to church with him. And when they arrived, Paul was excited and he said, I'm leading singing this morning, so I got to go to the prayer and we're talking. And so, Tara, can you do me a favor? And she said, sure, anything. He said, will you stay up here and wait for John? He's supposed to come to church this morning. And then he ran. It was like it was no big deal and he ran off and Tara's like, what? John's going to come to church? And one of the greeters, as Paul slipped off, one of the greeters came up and said, yeah, Hugh's been telling me to do that for weeks now, and John's never showed up. Tara said, okay, well, I'll wait just in case. 5 minutes went by, 10 minutes went by, it was just a few minutes before church. Here comes John. walking through the parking lot. Terry was able to greet him and welcome him to church. Here's what I believe. I don't believe John would be alive today, quite literally, if Paul and Maul had given up on him. If it had not been for their agape love toward him, I don't think he would be alive. But now, you see, church, disciples of Jesus, John's not only alive physically, but now he has the opportunity to be alive in Christ. And that makes all the difference in the world. Here's the truth. Jesus commands us to love the disadvantaged, no matter their dysfunction, no matter their disposition, no matter how much we disagree with what's happening in their lives, we are commanded by Jesus to love them, to welcome them, and even to share table fellowship with them so that then we can invite them into the kingdom way of Jesus. Because here's the truth. In the next life, there will not be any dysfunctions, disadvantages, or ungodly dispositions. All will be made new. All will be healed. So just imagine with me for a moment, will you? Could you imagine with me if we leave here today and we treated everyone, every person, every human being as if they were already made new without their dysfunction, without their disposition? Could we imagine and see what God sees? That they are created in His image, that they have been beautifully and wonderfully made, that they have value. And maybe, just maybe, we can love them with agape love. And this leads me into my last way that Jesus treated people. He loved those that were different from Him. And He calls us to love people that are different from us. And there's a little bit of overlap here, but I want to emphasize something on this point. Jesus loved and He served everyone equally. Because He loved them with agape love. For me, the greatest example of this from Jesus' life and ministry was toward those who were infected with leprosy. Leprosy, you may know, is an infectious and contagious disease, and if someone just even gets one spot of it, soon they'll be covered with leprosy. Some in certain places of the world still struggle with this. And as soon as someone is identified as having leprosy, they were sent to a leper colony where others who also had leprosy were living, and they had to stay together. And if they wanted to leave that colony and go somewhere, most often they would go together. And when they went, they were commanded by law to let people know that they were coming by shouting, "Unclean! Unclean!" And if you were anywhere in their proximity and you could hear them shouting that, whether you were in the marketplace shopping or just walking down the road or outside your home, you would, if you had children, you would gather them up. If you brought anything, you would gather your things and you would go in the opposite direction. But in Mark chapter 1, as everyone is headed in the opposite direction, looking out for their own physical interest, which I would have been in that camp, I want you to notice what happens next. A man with leprosy came to Jesus and begged Him on His knees, "If You are willing, You can make me clean." And filled with compassion, Jesus reached out His hand and He touched the man. "I am willing," He said, "be clean." And immediately the leprosy left him. And he was cured. I want us to notice just a few things quickly. Notice that when this man approaches Jesus didn't run. He wasn't intimidated. He stayed put. Because here's the thing. No matter what your struggle is, no matter what your sin is, Jesus is not intimidated by it. Not even a little. Even if it's contagious. Notice something else here. Before Jesus heals this man, what did he do? Before he spoke the healing word, be healed, be clean, he reached out and he touched him. Did he have to do that? No. Jesus didn't have to do that. But how long do we think, do we suppose it had been since this man had been touched by someone who didn't have leprosy? A long time. And so Jesus reaches out and touches this man, which I'm sure was healing in a completely different way. Jesus reached out, showed him some affection, healed the man, because that's how Jesus treated people. He authentically loved them with everything he had. And so my challenge for us today is this. Don't just modify your behaviors and call it good. Place yourself today. Humbly choose to place yourself today in the hands of the potter. And ask him daily to fashion you, to mold you, to shape you into his likeness. And then day to day, as you interact with people, don't run away from the hard cases. Don't go in the opposite direction of your irritants. Don't blast someone on social media. Instead, be willing to give an encouraging word. Be open to listening and praying with people and talking with people. Be vulnerable enough to share your story so that others can find encouragement and hope. And be willing. Maybe this morning you know someone near you is hurting for one reason or another. Be willing to put a hand on their shoulder or a hug and let them know that you see them and that you are with them and for them. Jesus was not intimidated with people that disagreed with him, those that were disadvantaged or different from him in some way, and neither should we. We should not be intimidated. Instead, we should, along with Jesus, we should see them, love them, and do everything we can to invite them into the kingdom way of Jesus. Let us love people the way that he loves us. And maybe it should start with treating others the way that we want to be treated. May God bless us in that. If you need to follow Jesus this morning, if you've never made that commitment to the Lord and you're ready to do that, we would love to hear your confession that Jesus is Lord and witness your baptism into him. Or maybe you just need some prayers of encouragement this morning, and our shepherds and myself will be available in the aisles to receive you and encourage you any way we can during this song. Let's stand and sing together.